keep it all as positive as you can. This dying experience she's going through is very precious time. Sure, she's trying to postpone the inevitable. But that's okay, as long as it doesn't continue too long. For then she needs time to say goodbye, say her goodbyes, or set her things in order. There will be many tears and hugs and frustrations to follow. Take on your task with the devotion of a person who would rather be sharing this time with them than doing anything else in the world. Let her deny. It will only last a while, and if you are truthful with her, she will thank you for being so. If you lied to her or evaded the truth, then she will wonder, what will you do it again? Don't let her guess whether or not she is being told the whole true story. Let her hope for the best. But Sullivan adds this illustration, quote, Mary passed several promised boxes she had quickly gleaned from her, quote, bread of life, unquote, box in an attempt to elicit from God a commitment that Bill wouldn't die. You don't want to add to her denial, but yet you can get into some tough spots. Someone called me on the phone and said, Pastor, God has given me some promises concerning my husband who they said was dying. She told me the scriptures that God gave her from the Old Testament concerning the long life that he would live. And in my heart of all hearts, I was broken because they had nothing at all to do with her husband. But it was just one of those things where she wanted to believe that so badly that she dug through the Bible and picked out anything that might sound like it was a reality. And I didn't have the heart to try to dissuade her thinking. So I just let her for a while believe that they were words from God. Because after all, how do I know? Maybe they were. But I felt in my heart they weren't. Just be positive. Positive love and total devotion are in order, or the order of the day for the primary caregiver. Truth, sincerity, and devotion to make every contact with this one, with us, one that adds up to happiness of the day. I consider it a privilege for the rest of us. Our loved one is in some sort of a denial, but it is just a feeling. She's trying to deal with a situation of her own emotion leads. How about a little advice to a spiritual caregiver? Don't yield to the temptation of joining her denial. You also don't want to believe this is really happening. So if you arrive on the scene with God isn't going to let this happen view, you're hindering and not helping the process. Even though it will be welcomed later, you might not be trusted. Be positive. And don't come on like gangbusters, taking over, making decisions, or all the rest. Remember, God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth, so listen twice as much as you speak. Well, don't put a lot of pressure on yourself. Just love them home. And denial can act as a buffer sometimes, as Ross adds. And in the back of your mind, remember, God really might heal her. And he did give Hezekiah some more years. We really don't know. And Isaiah 38, 4 and 5 says, Then came the word of the Lord to Isaiah, saying, Go and say to Hezekiah, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David your father, I've heard thy prayer, and I've seen thy tears. Behold, I will add unto thy days 15 years. It can happen. It can happen. But it doesn't always happen. I like the words that Jesus gave us concerning these very, very important times. I once had a situation where I was ministering to a child that was dying of a liver disease. During the visiting hours, a pastor came in with one of these faith and power messages. He cleared out the room of evil and commenced to tell them that the word had reached the evil, that evil had reached him, that evil had the child, and that the child would rise to complete health. And after a loud demonstration of the flesh, he wounded, closed the matter that the child would be healed. The mother believed the false prophet and was momentarily very happy. The child grew worse and died. The prophet never showed up again, and the mom doesn't want to hear anything about God because she has discerned that God lies. Well, can we pray for him? Sure. James 5:14-15 says, if any is sick among you, let him call for the elders of the church, let him pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. The prayer of faith shall save the sick. That's James 5:14. Well, it can happen. But this time will cause a great deal of binding between the two of you. If you keep your mind and your heart positive, and you're very, very patient with them, this could be a time of great binding and bonding. Louise Wise adds, the period of time following the terminal diagnosis can be a great time of love, of sharing and caring. Pray and love them through it. Well, now we might find them also getting very angry. Our loved one's very angry. Ecclesiastes 79:7-9. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angered, for the anger resteth in the bosom of fools. But it despised Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry, and he prayed to the Lord, saying, and said, I pray thee, O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in the country? Therefore I fled to Tarshish, for I knew that thou art a gracious God, merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and replenish thee of evil. Therefore, O Lord, I beseech thee, my life from thee, for it is better for me to die than to live. Then the Lord said, doest thou well to be angry? Wonder if it's wise to be angry at this time. Well, anger is just a feeling of extreme hostility, rage, wanting to fight. Your brother has ceased denying the gravity of his situation, and he's really angry. This is a good time to be careful not to become a target. God almost always becomes one. You may even hear him accuse God of not being fair. He knows he's saying words without care or wisdom, so expect it. He's either so angry that he strikes out to everyone, so angry that he doesn't want to talk to anyone, or just hotly quiet. Again, we're trying to understand the possible consequence of his feelings. Well, regardless of what faith we may have, all of us will at least be a bit angry when we have to leave our loved ones and go. One person said this. He says there's two main things that a man should never be angry at, and they are these: what he can't help, and what he can help, and what he cannot help. I don't believe we are really afraid to die. I think we're afraid of the process of dying. Our task is to stick with her devotedly by understanding her feelings and praying that the hard ones will pass. Your loved one is angry, and she probably is probably shocked at her words and feelings. In fact, she will often confess a good deal of embarrassment over her actions. Sullivan adds from his experience, again, I saw God as an angry intruder, but I remember one well-meaning member of our neighborhood putting her arms around her mother and saying, well, Ella, God knows best. And I got mad at her all over again. I could not understand why he was taking everybody away as a child. You know, they're going to be angry. Anger is there. Having to face the truth that he's leaving this wonderful world caused a myriad of disconnected feelings. He looks at his wife and knows that soon he will be out of her picture, and she will have to carry the load they carried for years as a team, now by herself. He wants her to get married and again so that the kids will have a father and a home and understand his anger, for he wanted to see his kids grow up and excel in sports and education. He wanted to see graduations and recitals. He wanted to be there. So all he wanted was to be there. Who in this world will be able to soften these feeling blows? But the best anyone can do is to try to help him to accept the apparent unfairness and give him a shoulder of understanding or heart of love. It's a difficult task, but we must try to understand some of those feelings. And anger is pretty tough. The word for the spiritual minded, let me remind you that you're looking at feelings and they're never wrong. Let her be angry. It will pass unless they are surrounded by others who are angry. If so, they will feed each other's feelings and continue to make each other miserable. Even the most spiritual will have seasons of anger, but they usually will get over it sooner. Let me add, many of these emotions may return even after they have appeared to leave. If you don't believe me, read Psalm 73. And Asaph feeling his anger and over his apparent losses that he was gaining in that while the unrighteous world wasn't suffering anything. My wife's aunt was a godly person. She always had a verse and a kind word for everybody. She got cancer, but held on to the fact that her faith would heal her. And she, with a big smile, would grab a very thin arm and say, God, and with a big smile, would grab me with her thin arm and say, God is going to put meat back on this body. Well, God didn't choose to do so. And she went home, but she went home to the place where she longed to always be. Her family was confused and angry, for they wondered why she wasn't healed. I guess the spirits ebbed, for they thought if a great person like her is not healed by her faith, how could they? Whatever you do, don't rebuke their anger, claiming it is a work of the flesh. God said that anger is okay as long as it doesn't become a way of life. Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath, Ephesians 4:26. If she's angry, let her go. Say little unless asked. She will later want to talk about it. Ross adds, quote, a patient who is respected and understood, who is given attention and a little time, will soon lower his voice and reduce his angry demands. And Moss adds, quote, patience strengthens the spirit, sweetens the temper, subdues pride, and bridles the tongue, quote unquote. Well, when you pray, pray for peace and patience. When you sing, sing songs of love and comfort. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. All right, let's move on. Now it's time for that person to bargain. Let's make a deal. Let's play that game. Jonah did it. Jonah, and read Jonah chapter 2, 1 through 4, 7 through 9. He winds up by saying, I'll sacrifice unto thee with a voice of thanksgiving. I will pray that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. Trying to make a deal. What is a bargain? A contract or an agreement on the purchase or sale of an item. A purchase made at a favorable goodly price. What's my brother feeling? Well, my brother has progressed from shock and confusion to denial to anger over his illness. And now he would like to make a deal for his life. You will, I will, we'll all do the same thing. He feels there's still a chance to get out of this jam by repenting over the past, promising to live saintly in the future. After all, what do we have to lose? This process is fairly easy to understand. Our brother is at a point where he realized that only a miracle can change his desperate situation. He might be feeling it just as bum luck, but he has always been able to get out of it. And this time he will too. We have often laughed at the so-called foxhole conversions we heard from the war times. Well, the truth is, denial is very natural. So we played a game you see on TV. Let's make a deal. Well, nobody knows the future. The truth is that no one knows the future, and all would like to make a deal with whoever we could. Well, in any case, when we get into these tough life-threatening spots, we spend a good deal of time trying to figure out how we are going to get out of them. We may even think like this. Well, maybe if I would promise to give up my golf or my fishing, I know, I'll spend more time and money on my family. I might feel that I wasn't asking enough asking with enough humility or sincerity. Maybe I would feel that if I was more kind and loving, I would get out of this mess. I'm sure I'll come up with everything I thought would work. One of the reasons why we should try to talk her out of dealing is that she might think that she made a deal when actually she didn't. One man was critically ill and held my hand and said, quote, "God told me He was going to let me live to see the year 2001, unquote. He died in 1994. And it wasn't because God didn't keep His bargain. It was because he had no deal at all. Well, it might hit hard on his family, for he told them his bargain. And it left them unready to deal with his death, and his wife hasn't yet dealt with it. Well, I feel it is lucky. It is okay. Not lucky. I feel it's okay. Let him bargain. But be sure that he knows that his bargains are often only his desires. God doesn't have to make a deal. There are some that think they have a bargain and stop taking medication, but don't let them do this. Kindly reason with them and help them to see that if they were able to bargain, the doctors would be the first to see it in their tests. Let the tests show the reality of the situation. Let the doctors say they can come off their medication, then let them off medication. Be careful not to be cruel. If all they have to live for is the hope that they have struck a bargain, then wait a while and they will see things differently. Then without a "I told you so" attitude, help them move on to the next step, which can be the toughest, depression. If they feel they were lied to or laughed at, it will be harder on them. Bargaining might happen. A lot of times your loved one is too spiritual to even try it. But feelings of desperation are very strong, so don't be disappointed if you see it in the most unlikely person. Let them go. Just be quiet, be kind and quiet. Let the Spirit lead. Now, as I started out this whole deal on, you might as well realize there is a such thing as spontaneous remission. So God can always do something, can always work a miracle, can't He? And remember, God might come again. Amen. God says it this way: "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my thoughts higher than yours. And my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." Okay, so now they've gone through that stage and they've found this present reality within them. Now they're depressed. Proverbs 18:14 says, "The spirit of man will sustain him in infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear?" Depression is, quote, "a low estate, a sinking of the surface, a hollow abasement, dejection, a state of dullness." He feels alone, dejected in a world of his own. He feels no one in the universe understands the situation. In fact, he would probably say that he doesn't care what happens to him. This is part of the process that can be seen on his face. He doesn't care that what anyone thinks. The whole world stinks. Just let me alone. I don't even care what happens. From the outset, let me say that there are many degrees of stimuli to depression. Let's not forget the weight that is added to his illness. Let the sky-high costs of hospital care, drugs and treatments, and thinking that his family's never going to get out of paying for this care. I'm sure we all know what it feels like when you feel guilty knowing you're going to leave a debt to your loved ones. It's worse. If he or she is active in their work, at home, or in the world, they feel even more useless. Just the loss of productivity is tough to handle. A man's ego is very fragile. Be very careful. Be very careful with it. In fact, it doesn't take a situation as grave as a terminal illness to make one deeply depressed. Let's try to limit the length of this treatise on feeling of the depression by limiting it to the depression in life of a dying loved one. I also must admit that I couldn't begin to write on this subject without acknowledging that the many and at times controversial methods of dealing with it Boy, there's a lot of people deal with it funny. Well, I can always lead one to God. Drescher explains, sorrow perhaps more than anything else can throw us into the merciful arms of God. Isn't it true? Isn't it true? I've looked into the eyes of a depressed brother and felt as though I was looking into his soul. This is so hard, for you're once faced with an impossible situation. There's nothing to say. This certainly isn't trying to try to impress him of all the cliches and wives' tales you've accumulated through the years. You'll always make it. Dobson quotes a patient who said, quote, you want desperately to trust the Father and believe in His grace and goodness, but deep inside, you're held captive by a sense of betrayal and abandonment. Deep down, they're asking, why is God letting me feel like this? Why is God letting me go through this? Well, this will often be a time for tears, but it's okay for tears. They're a normal release of feeling. In fact, I try to encourage them. Be kind, though. That old guy was raised to feel that tears were unmanly. Pastors, be sure you're prepared yourself, or you too might have a bad experience. How far do we go in conversation? I say go as far as they need. They will let us know. Here again, we're facing the truth that we need to love and listen. Don't be afraid to sit and love and respect. Whatever you do, don't show your uneasiness and your own vulnerability. One last plea. Get yourself some support. It's impossible for you to live with a depressed person for a long time without also being affected. Not even a professional health care worker can last long if she doesn't get support. If you feel you're at the end of your rope, then you can be sure you are. You need help as much as your loved one. You will be little help to him if you're sick yourself. The time period involved in your loved one's experience may be short or long. If you want to help most, be healthy. If a healthcare worker allows himself or herself to be used up, he becomes an uncaring professional, and everyone will complain about their poor bedside manner. Stressed out helpers do little to help terminally ill, depressed loved ones. Finally, we come to yielding. Ross calls it acceptance. I see it as reluctant yielding. Jesus said this. He went away a second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away except I drink it, thy will be done. Yielding is taking hold of the situation even though you hate it, don't want it, or desire it, or even think you can do it properly. All you know is the ball is in your hands and you're the only one playing the game. My brother has gone through the whole gamut of feelings. You start out with shock and confusion. He's tried to deny it ever even happened to him. Then he was angry, and then he was ready to bargain. And with the result, he went into depression. And now he's finally yielding to the fact that he's going home soon. In some strange way, he knows that if he doesn't yield, he will ruin the time he has left. He will finally begin to get some rest and sleep. He doesn't feel like he has surrendered, but he has yielded. I don't feel he has heartily accepted the conclusion, because to do so would be too much like surrender. He's not surrendering. Well, of all the feelings that it's the easiest to respond to, he has come to the place where he can actually improve his level of life to one which he had never known possible. Koff explains, acceptance comes mainly as a result of thinking, talking, and praying about the situation. Well, I love that thing that a wise seer said. He said, courage is being the only one who knows you're afraid. Let them be afraid, but love them. Get words from God. Stay with them. Don't diagnose them. Go through whatever they go through with them and love them. This is the end of this tape.